if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm another one of Remy's long lost forgotten true loves.
Oh, God.
I promise you. He will tell you about it. And in season six, we'll hear all about me.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. Today, we are discussing two more episodes of Sliders, The Fire Within. Woo-hoo! And The Prince of Slides. So getting into the first episode, The Fire Within, written by Joseph Anderson, directed by Jeffrey Levy. This originally aired November 15th of 1996.
I can't stop thinking about that fire world we landed in.
You think it was volcanic?
Well, possibly natural gas deposits. Burning for years like coal fires in Virginia.
It's weird. But for a moment there, I thought the fire was coming after me.
Now, perhaps it was the spirits of the hearth. You know, when I was a boy, my father used to terrify me with stories of the Karacha Kagalt, the blue flame spirits of fire that punish naughty boys. Just your imagination.
We begin with Remy playing virtual baseball, trying to win money by betting when the rest of the sliders interrupt him because, once again, it is slide time. They end up sliding into a world that is completely on fire, but luckily, their stay is brief. They don't notice, however, that as they slide out of that world, a tiny flame follows them into the vortex. They arrive on a world where the world's petroleum deposits exist in California rather than the Middle East, giving a great amount of power to the local oil company that is trying to quash its own workers' hopes for a union trying to obtain health insurance. As our sliders get jobs as scabs for the company, reports of arson arise, possibly being set up by the union as bullying tactics. However, the firefighters note that the fires are unlike any they have seen before, almost as if the fire was alive, moving around, actively avoiding their attempts to put it out. One late night, Quinn's life is saved by a flame that surrounds him, causing him to lose his breath and move out of the way of an oncoming truck. The sliders find and capture the flame, eventually developing a way to communicate with it, discovering that the flame understands dimensional wormholes and time slip mechanics. Meanwhile, Wade gets involved with a woman who is the head of the union, a woman whose husband supposedly set fire at the plant, but was in reality murdered for attempting to be a whistleblower about the company's tactics. While looking for evidence, Wade and Remy are captured by the boss of the company and left to burn alive in what he hopes will appear as another arson attempt. Quinn and Arturo gear up and go in to rescue them, give the union lady a disc to help prove her husband was murdered, and reunite with the flame, sliding to get the flame home.
Very soon we'll be leaving this place, and we might have to take you with us.
I like it here. There's much to burn.
If you stay, they'll try and destroy you every time you feed. And if you survive, you'll only do so by destroying things that we humans care about and hurting people like me. And one day, all the food will be gone.
I've decided I will go back where you found me.
I'm sorry. I don't know how to get you there.
I do.
Well, you do. I wish you could tell me how to get home.
Home?
It's a place where we'd like to go someday. It's where we started.
Where you like to burn?
Yeah, something like that.
If you release me in your journey, I will find a way.
But how?
Photon solar wave propulsion and time slip dimensional access.
Come again?
All it takes is $19.95 and a credit card. Call now. Operators are standing by. Let us help you reach your weight loss goals.
You're controlling the television. You can transmit signal waves?
You do not?
No.
All right, let's see what we've got in the way of trivia here.
All right, so in the episode, there was supposed to be a scene of the Sliders actually getting hired for the jobs that they took. They were talking about experience. The one guy said something about Arturo's soft hands, and he would need gloves for the hard work he's going to be doing. Wade, she was asked about her experience with Edisonware, which I guess were the computers and typewriters that they were using in the warehouse there. There was a reference to a past world where a tiger was coming after Quinn, and he said this in reference to when he said the flame was coming after him. He referenced this other world where he remembered there was a tiger coming after him in another world that they were on, which is, that's a weird line that they had in there. I'm like, what? I can see why they took that out. I don't understand why they would have had it in there in the first place.
Yeah, let's reference something we've never seen.
Exactly. Let's see. Originally, Quinn was supposed to hear the conversation about the arson fires, not Arturo, when he was standing in line behind the big boss. It was supposed to be Quinn, not Arturo. A weird, funny bit was after Quinn was saved by the flame, Remy was very unbelieving, and Quinn tells Remy to smell his hair, you know, because it was singed, but it wasn't burned, you know, and Remy's like, he goes in to smell his hair, he's like, I hope no one sees me doing this, and he's sniffing Quinn's hair. It's kind of funny. There was a reference to more alt history about Sam Gompers, the guy who started up unions originally. And then there was also a scene where Arturo, not quite being maybe sadistic, but he was trying to show the flame who was in control. When the flame was in that little beaker, Arturo starts to shut off like oxygen to the flame, or he like blocks the oxygen from going into it just to show the flame that he's in control. It was a weird little scene. I'm like, it's kind of a little sadistic, maybe, you know?
Yeah, if you're trying to get the thing to trust you, it's probably not a good thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Let me take away your oxygen. And then this kind of makes sense. And in the episode, they probably shouldn't have cut it out, but there was a conversation that Wade has with Arturo about how she just wants to meet Mr. Wright. But how can she meet Mr. Wright because she's sliding all the time, you know? But then she, as she's talking with him about it, she starts saying, but I don't even know if I want a family yet. I don't know if I want babies. So, I mean, maybe I shouldn't even be looking for Mr. Wright. And I was like, well, all right. So I see how that plays into her outburst later on about babies. But like, when I'm reading this, I'm thinking, I mean, you could meet Mr. Wright and you don't have to have babies. You could just have him for companionship, you know? You don't have to, just because you meet your, you know, Mr. Wright or Mrs. Wright, you don't have to have babies. It was a weird conversation thing that I don't know exactly how it was supposed to fit into it. It felt like they were trying to do character development with her. And it just seemed, to me, even that scene seemed out of place. It fits with the episode because of her little, you know, part later that we'll talk about. But it's like, it just didn't feel like natural to this episode for me.
Remy, there's something I gotta tell you.
Look, if this is stuff that you've been saving, and you want to save it because you don't think
it's like that. It's more personal.
Listen, the sirens, girl. Just hang in there, huh?
Remy, I gotta tell somebody. I want to have a baby.
What?
Not now. I mean, maybe in a couple years. I want to have a baby.
That's what you wanted to tell me.
Hey, Samantha's trouble figuring out she's pretty profound, huh? You know, my mom is having me when she was my age. Maybe it's hereditary.
You'll make it, okay?
All right, well, let's get into our discussion of The Fire Within. So, you know, kicking off the episode, we start with Remy trying to make some money. Mm-hmm. And he's playing this, like, baseball video game. And, like, the people in this world are, like, so into it. Like, it's like a real baseball game or something.
Yeah, they're major into it. They're, like, cheering him on. It's like they're surrounding him. He's, like, in a cage and everything. They're like, yeah.
I love how they try to weave in, like, these new technologies or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this time, it would have been, like, brand new for, like, a motion control kind of video game thing. So they're like, oh, this is the future. Let's throw this in. People will be, like, so amazed.
Mm-hmm.
But he loses all their money.
And now he loses their money. Not because he's doing badly, but because they have to slide. That's the only reason, really. He's doing pretty good.
Yeah, and it looked like he would have won. And that, I love that Quinn even calls that out to Arturo when he says, like, you know, if he'd won, you wouldn't be complaining. And
right.
Technically, he did win, but circumstances meant that he had to leave all the money behind.
Exactly. I didn't. I kind of didn't like that they made him the guy who loses the money again. You know, he's like the one they always, he's always the fall guy for that. Oh, you lost our money again. Thanks a lot, singer man, you know?
Well, I guess at the very least, they weren't in a bobsled competition, so.
Yeah.
It's a better way of doing it. They slide onto this, like, fire engulfed world, and the fire follows them.
Yes, it does. It follows them.
So what do you think of the concept of this sentient fire?
Well, you know, Arturo says later, he goes, this is a fantastic turn in evolution. Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit, Arturo. And I don't think you can say this is a turn in evolution. You know, like this to me, like this has nothing to do with evolution.
Yeah, exactly. This is just a different life form.
Yeah. Really. It's like, however could you explain, like, yes, we, you know, we crawled out of the sea and, you know, became whatever and monkeys and chimpanzees, Neanderthals, whatever. And then we're fire, you know?
It is weird how he explains it. He does make it sound as if, like, at one point they could have been people who just evolved beyond that, you know? And that's been done better in a lot of other sci-fi shows where, like, humans evolve to, like, beyond needing a physical form. But that's still kind of like a spiritual, mental thing in a corporeal form, not turning into fire. But, you know, I still think I kind of like the little flame.
I liked it until it starts, like, talking and knowing a whole bunch of stuff that just, to me, seems beyond what it should know. You know, like, as a flame that maybe is acting on, like, instinct and, like, just it follows them for whatever reason, maybe because it's in a world where everything is burning already and these are new things that just appear and they aren't burned yet. I could see it being attracted by instinct to that. I like that idea.
Yeah, because it is kind of ironic that they then slide into this oil refinery world.
Right, yes.
And it's just got nothing but combustible things to feed on, as it were. Later when they are talking to it and Quinn's giving it like samples of things. You know, like, I think he says newsprint, well, it's paper.
Right.
And, wood, and, you know, it's sort of like agreeing with how much it likes it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know about the voice. The voice was kind of creepy.
he starts talking to it. So let's just go into the whole flame thing here. He starts talking to it and he starts repeating stuff back. All right. And this is something that I thought, and it comes up actually later in, Messages in Time, which I'm glad that someone also thought about this. I was thinking, like, you know, like repeating stuff back is not exactly just like learning language, you know? So apparently this flame has, it knows language already. It knows, somehow it understands English, you know? Like, I know it transforms it with the spectrometer and all the doodads that they had going on, but it just seems like a little far-fetched that they would be able to talk that well to each other with just the equipment that they had.
Quinn, like, lays out how it works.
Yes.
By, science. By talking to it before it even understands him. So for no other benefit than the viewing audience to try and understand it. But yeah, it's this whole thing about changing sound waves into some sort of chemical reaction or light burst or something. I don't know. They can talk to each other now. So there.
I get that, Arturo and Quinn are very smart. They're freaking amazing. Genius, you know? But, like, this seems not like something that they've ever even thought about before. It's just, maybe, I don't know. It was just weird to me. I just didn't buy it. And then I also didn't buy the fact that the flame is like, oh yeah, I understand cross-dimensional physics and time slip mechanics. Of course you do. Of course you do. All your life, you've been in this fire world, but you understand other dimensions. Okay.
Because, yeah, even after it sort of says that it completely understands all this stuff,
yeah,
it's suddenly just like, I'll stay here, or you can take me back to where I came from.
Right.
And it's like, after Quinn says, like, we can't take you back where you came from, it says that it can, like, leave the planet by itself or something, and then they end up taking it with it anyway. And I don't know, it is all very undefined.
Yeah, the flame was saying that basically he knows how to get back to his home, you know, like he understands it enough that he can get back to his world that he came from. If they can open the vortex, he can direct them to that world. Okay, he can do that. And like, the theory is that he could maybe help them get home as well, but it's never followed up on. We assume that he gets the fire back to the world because of what the flame said. That's how I read it anyway. Or that's how I saw it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. But of course, you're right. It's not going to be followed up on, so why does it matter?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, I don't know if I don't like the idea. I thought this was a weird episode. I'm just like, sentient fire. I don't know.
Well, at the same time, I do like that they sort of dealt with this issue of something mm-hmm. having followed them. You know, we've dealt with things like this before, like way back yes. in the first season with the spider wasps. They yep. brought that with them. Never followed up on it. Could have happened. Right. Anything could have happened with that.
Yep. And the virus as well. Yeah. They were talking about the virus. Yep. Exactly.
So it's good that they were at least dealing with it. And at the end of the day, they did take it with them or take it back to where it came from or whatever.
Yeah. They took responsibility for, you know, what they did, which is good. I'm glad they did that. I think it could have been a better episode if they had chosen something else other than like sentient fire, you know, like, just saying.
But the world itself, I thought, was quite cool. It had this weird mix of like 50s and 90s technologies and sensibilities.
Yeah, that was confusing.
It was a super weird mashup because, you know, they've got like these like typing pools where all mm-hmm. the women work in the typing pool. But they've all got computers and monitors and stuff like that. They've got you know, proper cordless phones, you know, nothing like the old style there. But
exactly.
Yeah, you know, the bosses are all still in that 50s mentality with the nice suits and the pocket watches. Mm-hmm. He's always honking on a cigar, flirting with that one woman. You know, there was quite heavy implications that they probably went to his office and did things that you don't do during work hours.
Exactly. Yeah, it was very, it reminded me a lot of Mad Men, you know, that mm-hmm. the whole thing with, you know, having a little extended lunch hour, you know? And then, of course, they had the TVs were like old, like 1950s style TVs, you know, like little circular tube TVs or something. It was very weird.
Yeah. The TVs didn't really make much sense because they actually had proper computer monitors. So,
yeah.
Weird,
exactly.
Weird crossover.
It's like,
there.
It's, I don't know what the thinking was there, like, but why they combined the different, you know, the different styles there, the different eras.
Yeah.
And well, they and the did cars,
set,
too.
Yeah, they set it up at the beginning with that, I think it was a T-Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And Arturo loves it.
What the heck is with Arturo? All of a sudden, he's like, oh my God, this is an amazing machine. It's wonderful. Absolutely. Miss Wells, you don't understand. Marvelous engineering. It's like, he's never really talked much about cars before. And then suddenly, he's like a little kid. He's like a giddy kid with this car. Like, I would expect that from Remy, but not from Arturo.
Well, the other week when he was doing his Carpe Diem stuff, he did have mm-hmm. the Rolls Royce there as well.
Right.
He said he had a car just like it back in his youth.
You know what confused me? When they first come into the town there, and this goes along with back in the Twister world, electric Twister slide test, when he says, oh, look at that tornado. It's obviously electrical based. You know, it's like, how do you know? You know, and like he looks in this world, he looks around, he says, obviously this is a company town, you know, and the world's oil deposits must be here in the U.S. How do you know this, Arturo? You're just looking around. I mean, I understand educated guesses, but there's nothing to really indicate that, you know?
Yeah, like it's like later when he shows up with like a book or something, he's just like, you see, I was right. All the oil is here.
Exactly. it was weird, but you know, whatever, moving on.
Yeah, so the flame, like, starts burning stuff down, and you know, all the firefighters are talking about how, oh, I've never seen fire like it. It's like it was alive. Then it starts following Quinn around like a lost puppy.
Yes.
And even goes to the effort of saving him when he's going to get hit by a truck. It engulfs him, cutting off his oxygen, so he has to stand still and not get hit by the truck.
Exactly, exactly.
So I think they were trying to tie in these things where it's like, can we trust the flame or not? Like, was it attacking him or was it saving him? Or,
right,
you know, all this stuff. So when they like finally get into it all, as much as I you know, I liked the idea of this flame, it was a little haphazard in places.
Yeah, just a little bit. I have to mention the scene where they're in the strip club. That stripper, you know, that stripper was awful. Dead freaking awful. First of all, she's wearing, like, she wears the outfits that they wear to work in at first. She's wearing,
those weird raincoats and
yeah, those weird hats. Raincoats. And, like, her dance moves, those were not very, like, sensual, suggestive, I want to give you a dollar, you know, stripper moves at all. And, like, when I was watching her, her blue hair and her moves reminded me of, like, Katy Perry. I was like, hey, look at this. Katy Perry is stripping. You know? And, like, even after she took off the raincoat, I'm like, I would not go here. I would not go to this place. There's got to be better ones around someplace.
Yeah.
You know, but Quinn, like, if you watch Quinn, he's there talking to Arturo, and, like, he's saying, you know, like, I don't know about this flame. I keep thinking back to that world, but, like, he's staring in awe at the stripper. He's just like, he can't take his eyes off. I'm like, oh, come on, Quinn. There's so many more better out there.
The two seem so relaxed in there as well.
They did.
And at one point, Arturo talks about, like, how they put on a good breakfast there as well. So it's like, first thing in the morning, all right, let's go to the strip club for breakfast.
Exactly.
And watch women not strip. Or be sensual or sexy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I'll eat my breakfast and read the newspaper. And then on the other side, you got Wade getting involved in this woman's life. You know,
right.
She's like the head of like the union rebellion kind of thing.
Right.
Because she believes her husband was murdered by the people who own the oil company, right?
Right. Now, I see this, I think, the woman and even the boss and his, you know, little, you know, assistant there that he has fun with, those characters were, to me, they felt very underdeveloped. Like, this was like a whole other storyline that they could have really developed, you know, these characters and the story, built it up, you know, to this amazing thing, but they focused more on the fire part of it, which I think was a mistake.
I think he was supposed to be like the big bad of the episode, and he's the one who like leaves Wade and Remy to just burn to death
in the building.
But really, he's not a very well-developed character. You don't really understand what his motivations are beyond the point that they want to set up a union for all the workers so they can get health insurance, pretty much.
Right. And the woman herself, too. Like, there's a whole, like, to me, like, you barely knew her. You know, and when you did first actually talk to her, when Wade goes to her in her union headquarters or whatever it is, she was kind of a bitch, you know? She's like, I don't want your bottles of medicine. Get out of here. You know, I don't need this from someone who works for them. I mean, I understand where she's coming from, but I was like, all right, fine. I'm getting out of here. I don't care. You know, it's like, I don't care about you. I don't know. You know, it's like, I don't care about your character.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she is. She's just a nasty person, like, most of the time. You can understand maybe she's a bit passionate about it because her husband's dead, but
we don't really learn anything about her, about him, besides what they're doing exactly right at this moment, you know? So it's like, it's hard to be sympathetic. Like, okay, naturally, yes, her husband died, murdered by the company, so let's help. But other than that, it's like, there's not enough to make me feel like, oh man, that's terrible, you know? I hope they win this one.
Yeah, it's like they had the story about the fire following them to this oil refinery.
Mm-hmm.
But then they needed something for Wade and Remy to do. So let's throw in this whole thing about unions and
exactly
murder exactly. plots and whatever.
Yeah, I think this could have been a whole different episode if like the flame was just a little bit less of the focal point and there was more focus on the whole union versus corporation type thing. You know, like focus on that side of it.
That brings us to like the whole thing about how she has a baby as well. So we should feel even more sympathetic for her because now she's a single mother. It's like you were saying in the trivia, it leads to this moment where suddenly Wade is like, I want to have babies.
Yeah. I want to have bits.
And yeah. It's just out of the blue, like out of nowhere.
It's out of the blue, and it's out of the blue, but it is also so like non-committal. It's like, I want to have a baby someday. Not now. Someday I want to have a baby. It's like, okay, great. Yeah. Someday. It's like, yeah. Whatever.
She's facing death, and this is what she comes up with.
Yeah. It was just weird. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, I don't get why that comes up now. You know, like, understanding the trivia, how it was supposed to be linking back to a conversation earlier, makes more sense. But still, like, even with the woman who's pregnant, like, like, there's so much just shoehorned into her stories. You know, Wade's like, I used to help my sister or friend when she was pregnant or something like that. So now, you know, it's like, that was just thrown in there. And then she's supposed to have this conversation with Arturo, like, oh yeah, I think I want to find Mr. Wright, but I don't know if I want babies. And then finally here, oh, I want a baby. You know, it's like, I don't know. It just felt so forced. Like, it's not like a natural character development for me anyway, for what I wanted.
Yeah, and Sabrina Lloyd, I mean, she did fine.
Oh, she did fine acting.
The delivery of it and everything, mm-hmm. like, all that was fine. But I think even Remy was a bit like, okay, girl, now just get under this wet blanket.
You know? Get under that blanket, I'll give you a baby.
Like, he just had no idea what to say to that.
I know. It was just, it was really, really strange.
But then it falls apart at the end because Quinn and Arturo go in to the building to save Remy and Wade, and the flame's there. And at this point, they've been calling it Flame Boy, which I thought was kind of cute, actually.
Flame Boy, yes.
And he's talking to it in the building, and I'm like, how are you talking to it without your spectrometer gizmo?
Yep, exactly.
You're just breaking your own rules now.
Yep.
This is silly.
This is what Sliders does good, you know? They break their own rules.
Yeah, because I was with it. All right, spectrometers, you're talking to the flame. Creepy-sounding voice, but whatever. But yeah, when you start breaking your own rules out of nowhere, I'm just like, yeah, okay. And they manage to, like, just pick it up and take it, you know, slide away. It's off to wherever they left What's-His-Face from Luck of the Draw and the chick in the abusive relationship. What was her name? Melinda?
Something
wherever like they are, that's where Flame Boy is now as well.
There you go. We've got Ryan and her and the dog and the Flame Boy all together hanging out somewhere on this wonderful world that we'll never see.
So I kind of liked the episode, but then, it fell apart at the end.
Yeah, no.
I kind of like this episode. I liked it more than the previous few that we've talked about that we've
kind
of been ragging on. I did kind of like this episode.
We'll just have to agree to disagree.
And now it's time for another episode of Tech Talk with Quinn Mallory.
And the computer will convert that back into sound. You ready?
Hey!
This has been another episode of Tech Talk with Quinn Mallory.
Okay, getting into the second episode today. The episode is The Prince of Slides, written by Aaliyah Horwitz, directed by Richard Compton. This originally aired November 22nd of 1996.
You don't seem to understand.
No, you don't seem to understand.
Let him go, George.
Please, Aunt Mary, stay out of this.
He's a friend of the Duke's. I saw them speaking.
We are the Duke's new personal assistants.
Since when? The Duke barely tolerates the mandatory attendance that I impose on him.
Since the Duke phoned me at Buckingham Palace and asked me to put together a team of professionals to look after him during his pregnancy.
You have experience with Buckingham's royal staff.
Sir, I have trained so many people at Buckingham Palace, I'm known there as the professor. This is Miss Wells, the Duke's personal nutritionist. And over there, with his face squashed against that door like a bug on a windscreen, is the Duke's fitness trainer.
Well, if he's the Duke's fitness trainer, then what was he doing in pre-op?
You blistering idiot. The Duke is about to have a baby. Are you suggesting that fitness does not come into question? Now, I suggest you release him at once before the Duke finds out.
Well, We begin with a visit from Wade's diary as the sliders joke about the professor's unfortunate slide into a bee colony when a woman, the Duchess Danielle, comes in on a gurney, very pregnant but still too early to give birth, calling out to Remy when she sees him. The nurses tell Remy Prime, believing him to be Duke Remy of this world, that it's time to get prepped for what he believes is a blood transfusion, being that they were the same blood type on Earth Prime. When Remy awakens, he is horrified to discover that Danielle's baby has been transferred into him to carry for the rest of the pregnancy, a normal procedure on this world due to a viral epidemic that prevents women from carrying a child to full term. Meanwhile, we learn that Lady Mary, Danielle's personal assistant, appointed by the king himself, has been plotting against the monarchy, going so far as to have hired an assassin to kill the real Duke Remy, a plan now in upheaval with Remy Prime here, as well as the murder of the king and his two sons who died in a, quote, house fire set up by Lady Mary, all of which means Remy's unborn child is next in line for the throne, once he is old enough to assume his duties. Until that time comes, however, Lady Mary's nephew George would be the ruling power, which is obviously something she would enjoy. Quinn and Wade find the real Duke, taking him back to the castle, while Danielle figures out herself that Remy is not the real Duke because he sings amazingly well, while the Duke was apparently tone deaf. Remy explains sliding, and Danielle accepts the reality he sets forth. Later that night, an attempt on Remy Prime's life is taken, but the professor intervenes and prevents it. However, the assassin does get away. Mary takes the two Remys, Danielle and Arturo, to Camp Muir, while Wade and Quinn discover Mary's pin on Remy's bed, a sign that she was the one who attempted to kill Remy earlier. The two search for more evidence, finding out that Mary had an affair with the king and that George is actually the illegitimate son of the king and official royalty, thus next in line for the throne. Mary drugs the group, instructing her lackey to burn the whole place down. Luckily, they wake up and escape, the Duke putting the fire out. Remy Prime begs Arturo to remove the baby, now in distress from the stress and smoke of the fire. George and Quinn fight their way past Mary's guards, arrest Lady Mary, and arrive just in time to see the newly born king safely delivered by Arturo. After some heartfelt goodbyes between Remy and Danielle, our group slides to a world where a woman is forcing her daughter off a balcony. While Quinn and company plead with her to stop, the child falls but promptly spreads her wings and flies off, much to the astonishment of our quartet.
I heard you singing to the baby in the garden earlier.
Yeah, I was working on a little song for him. Is everything okay, sweetheart?
To begin with, I'm not your sweetheart. My husband never sang a day in his life. He's tone deaf. Apparently you, whoever you are not. I demand to know exactly who you are.
Okay, there's no need to get upset.
Really, my baby is...
Please. Just let me explain. I promise you, your baby is as safe with me as he would be with your husband. I swear it. Just let me explain before you go calling the guards. Please.
Okay, so what have we got in the way of trivia for this episode?
Okay, so when Remy goes up to the candy machine, he actually references a coin that he had from the Dream Master's world. He actually talks to himself and references the dream world where he had the coin for the candy bar. Of course, it wouldn't work here. There's some more alt history where they actually were talking about how Danielle is a descendant of Thomas Jefferson, who ended up being the first king of America, and his second wife, who was a slave. So it talks about her descendant from Thomas Jefferson. In our world, of course, George Washington, they wanted George Washington to be king of America, but he refused, and that's how they came up with the idea of presidents. But in this alt history, Thomas Jefferson said, no, it's all right, I'll be the king, it's all good, you know. So he becomes the king and has a second wife who's a slave, and that's how Danielle came about from that lineage there. I think that was kind of neat. You know, it would have been cool if they had put that in there.
You know, I was going to say that I wish they'd gone a bit more into the old history. I thought that would have been interesting. You know, how
exactly?
Because they referenced Buckingham Palace as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be interesting to sort of get into the old history of how an African-American family became royalty in America.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that would have been really cool. So there was also a scene about the Duke and how him and Danielle were fighting about his, you know, rumored infidelity. And the reason that he's like away, like he's at Camp Muir, I thought it was odd that he was just like hiding out there. But apparently, I guess he's he was supposed to be there out of spite. He didn't want to go back because he was fighting with Danielle, was the original idea. That's why he was still at the camp after he was attempted murder or whatever. He just wanted to stay there because he was still fighting with Danielle. There was supposed to be a magazine cover that was going to be shown. It was called Paternity Today. And on the cover was going to be a shot of a man, a naked man, much like when Demi Moore was pregnant and posed for that famous pregnancy photo of hers.
Right.
It was supposed to be a guy doing the same type of thing. Good for a joke, but, you know, not needed. There was a weird scene with Wade and Quinn finding a sword, and they were doing like bad pirate impressions. Like they found the sword and they were pretending to fight each other and, you know, like, you saucy wench, you know, and all this like, I'll get you, you know, it was very strange. It's probably a good idea. They, you know, they cut it out. It was goofy. Really.
Your aim
goofy.
Will be true.
there you go. Exactly. Exactly.
Lame.
Originally, it wasn't supposed to be the Duke being tone deaf the way it was in the final script. Originally, George and Danielle actually tell Remy that he's tone deaf because Remy's like, oh, I think I'm going to write a song for the baby. And George and Danielle are like, are you sure that's a good idea? And they're like, why? Well, because you're tone deaf. And Arturo makes a joke, you know, saying something like, well, you could write the song. It's fine because the baby can't hear anyway. So, you know, it's too little. So it's like, haha, you know. So that wasn't how they were going to find out that Remy was not Duke Remy. The way they were going to find out about it was Remy was going to eat some peanuts. And apparently Duke Remy was allergic to peanuts, had a peanut allergy. And that's how Danielle would find out about him not being the real one.
Right. So they kind of just merged those two ideas into something new.
Exactly. There was a scene, you know how Arturo was kind of like a little, what's the word? Arrogant about the servants. There was a remark that Danielle made after Arturo left the room about how the chef spits in Arturo's food because of his arrogance. Yeah, I thought that was good because he was very arrogant. He's like, oh, servants love to serve. They live for it and they expect us to act superior. It's like, okay, you know.
Well, you know, that's actually quite true. You know, people take the royal family very seriously. I remember there was a thing here in Australia when Kate Middleton had Prince George, I think it was, and a radio station called up the hospital and wanted to like speak to the Queen or something like that. And they managed to like talk a nurse into putting them through to the royal suite, birthing suite or something like that. And they didn't expect that would happen. Like it was a prank call.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And the woman ended up, I think, committing suicide or something. She was so embarrassed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. It was like a big, huge, like, thing here. And
oh, wow. And
so I think people take, you know, royal family very, very seriously when it comes
to
how you behave and how they behave in return.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. Wow. Okay. Well, that's news to me. There you go.
Not to bring the show down or anything. Got serious there for a second.
It's okay. It's all right. We can bring it back up here. All right. Let's see. So, there was also, well, actually, this is going to bring it down too. There was originally a scene with, Danielle and Remy. And, you know, Remy tells him or tells her the story of how she got into the accident and she wouldn't like, you know, didn't want anything further to do with him at all. And, he says to her, you know, like that really hurt me so bad. It killed me, you know, when you wouldn't look at me and I just started crying and I couldn't stop crying. That's how I got the name Crying Man. I'm like, oh, that's not a good story. That's not a good story.
They were going to tie that into the history of the name Crying Man.
I know. Like to me, I just figure that's just his shtick, you know, that's just his shtick. And
yeah.
He tries to tie it into this, like, this is why they call me the crying man, because of my love for you, baby. You know, it's like, oh, I don't.
Yeah. Did anybody actually ask for the history of the name Crying Man?
Yeah. I mean, anybody wondering, were they pining for that? Well,
no.
And then finally, I think this might have been a little bit better, and we'll talk about it later, but paramedics would arrive at the Camp Muir just in time to help deliver the baby.
Rather than Arturo. Oh, interesting. Yeah. No, yes. I kind of like that they brought Arturo into it.
Well, we'll get to that part in the discussion.
My dearest Mary, this will be my last letter as the Queen is growing suspicious. I understand the reasons behind your request, but cannot agree to recognize our son George as legitimate.
George is
Lady Mary's son?
And the king is his father.
Well, that means he's royalty. And if he's royalty, then he's next in line for the throne if there are no other male heirs. We've got to get that letter to the press. Grab it.
George, speak of the devil.
I should have known you were rebels. What have you done with the Duke and Duchess and my aunt?
Is that how you're going to cover this up? Frame us for their disappearance? Sure, go ahead. Blame the American revolutionists.
What frame? What are you talking about?
You can drop the act. We know you're the king's son.
What? That's preposterous. Take them away.
He doesn't know.
Know what?
Well, before you grease up the guillotine, you might want to read this.
Okay, so getting into our discussion of The Prince of Slides. So, at the beginning, Wade's diary is back again.
Yes, it is. And this time, we get a little glance at the diary. So I went ahead and stopped it on the frame, and I typed out the words that I could see, you know, what that she was writing. And I'm vindicated, because when I went to go look at earthprime.com for any little insider notes and such, they had done the same thing. So I was like, oh, good. Someone else did it as well. So the basically, her diary that she's writing in right there, it's just complete nonsense. It doesn't make any sense at all. What we can see in that, on that page, it says, "The music on this world is coming from the sliders of another world. With Remy, Quinn, and Arturo comes the skills of sliding," then it's obscured, "sliding in our universe," then it's obscured, "the sliding," then it's obscured, "double is," then it's obscured, "love for the way." So it's just like, you know, like maybe there makes more sense if you could see the obscured parts, but I think that it's just nonsense stuff that she was just writing words, you know, sliding and dimensions and world and the names. And I think that's all they told her to do.
Well, that's really interesting. I did like that first line though. The music on this world is coming from the sliders of another world.
Yeah.
As if to say, like, some people like slid into a world and became like really big, like music stars or something, right. Music celebrities. Yeah. Or it's like a drop thing about how they maybe actually score the show itself.
Yeah, maybe.
Using music from another dimension's version of the TV show. I don't know. That's weird. It's interesting, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It was kind of cool to read. I was like, oh man, I wish they had some more screenshots of that.
But, you know, we pretty much like get into it, because they're in the hospital because Arturo had landed on a beehive, which I know they wouldn't shoot that. Can you imagine John Rhys-Davies like having to pretend to be getting stung by bees or something? No. Let's just get straight into it. He did do that, and that's why we're here.
Exactly.
And we get into this whole monarchy of America thing and another long-lost love of Remy's.
I was like, we just met, what, two episodes ago, Alicia, you know, his long-lost love, who he was going to move in with or whatever. And now we have Danielle, who I guess he was living with or something. It's like he has, you know, like, I think he's more, like, if I want to get analytical, I would say he's probably more in love with the idea of being in love than actually being in love.
It seems to be something that they're bringing up, not only for Remy's character, but they were trying to weasel it in there with Wade in the last episode as well.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just, I mean, I could buy Alicia, Danielle a bit more, because it seemed to have happened like a long time ago, like maybe when he was in his 20s or something.
Exactly.
He was living with her. She was pregnant. And then, you know, all this car crash stuff went down. So I could believe that a bit more than maybe he's not going to bring her up.
Right.
Unlike Alicia, where it's just like, well, that was like happening when we met Remy. So
exactly.
It's weird that you've never mentioned it. Yeah. You know, I kind of roll with it. I like it. And, you know, as she's being rushed into the hospital, he thinks that they need a blood transfusion, which he would know because of the car accident. So that makes plausible sense. You know, in their world, they were compatible donors, so he's just going to roll with it. But no, it turns out in this world, they take the baby out of the mother because they can't get past, I think it was the second term, and they put it into an artificial womb inside the man. So this is an interesting idea.
It is. It is. It makes for some funny parts, but like the way I remembered the episode, in fact, I said it last episode, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that one being humorous. This was not as humorous as I remember. I think it's just those key spots that happened where there was a little bit of humor in there, but it's actually a very, It's more of a touching episode. It really is.
We were talking last week about how the messages in time, how the people were kind of concerned that we were going into some sort of junior tribute right. for this mm-hmm. episode because of the promos for the upcoming episode. And it's really not like that. It's not, I understand it's a man being pregnant and that was the right. premise of Junior. But yeah, Junior was a straight up comedy,
Exactly.
Whereas this, you're right, it is taken a lot more seriously. There's this whole thing about the royal family mm-hmm. and he's carrying royalty. So I thought that was a nice touch to it.
Yeah.
And all the stuff with Remy being pregnant, I thought was quite good. Like he becomes very paternal towards mm-hmm. this child growing inside of him, which is natural if you were pregnant,
Right, right. The hormones and whatnot.
So I liked it.
The thing I noticed this, actually, I didn't know where to put this, but it was on earthprime.com. They have their own episode reviews. And like I said, I like to look at other people's reviews and see what they thought of the episode as well, when I'm taking the notes down and everything. And the guy said on there, I forget who his name is, but the guy who reviews the episodes, he said it was funny to see Remy be so paternal because the last time we saw him, with his son – back in season one, he tried to strangle the little boy. Remember the one who said,
That's right.
You whip, Jack.
Yeah, I've never seen someone so whipped as you.
He tried to strangle him. So this is a big change for him in this episode.
And then, of course, they lay it on even further and come up with this whole murder plot and heirs to the throne kind of stuff.
I like the whole murder, I guess it is kind of a murder mystery. It was kind of neat. It was good. And that was very, you weren't sure. I mean, of course, we know who it is because we've seen it before, but I thought it was well done. I like the whole, the layers, George is actually the son because I didn't suspect that when I first watched it.
The one thing that didn't sit right for me, though, mm-hmm. is that, let's say that Lady Mary got away with it all, uh-huh. right? And George becomes king, right? Yep. Now, sure, George would be king because mm-hmm. it's his blood right, but you think they would have figured it out at that point. The king had died. And then there was the king's brother and his two sons had all three of them were burned to death in a house fire or something like that.
Right.
And then the duke was killed while right. pregnant. I think they would have gotten a bit sus on this whole plot.
A little suspicious, Yeah.
I don't think she herself would have gotten away with it. They would have figured it out. And right. whether or not George would remain king or I don't know if they can actually impeach a king or whatever, but
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, by the end, I don't think it would have worked out very well for Lady Mary.
I don't know. Maybe she was going to try. Well, she blamed it on the revolutionists or whatever they called them.
Yeah.
She was blaming it on other people. So maybe if that had come up, maybe they would have said it was a plot. To kill that particular line of kings. And so maybe she would, I don't know. It seems like maybe she would have a way out of it. And then George would pardon her. Well, not pardon her, but he would be protective because it's his aunt.
But it was still cool. I liked it, especially when Remy is resting in bed and this, cloaked figure comes in and tries to suffocate him,
mm-hmm.
which was hard to watch too because she jumps right up on the pregnant belly and then starts. Yeah. Oh, and I was like, oh no, don't sit on the, oh no.
Exactly.
I
feel
so bad for the baby.
I did I liked Arturo's cover story for the Sliders, for him.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, Quinn and Wade. It's he just comes up with it just like that. And it's so perfect, and it's they can't really question it, And if they talked to Remy, he would confirm it, these are my friends, it was perfectly, I was perfectly done. I was that's awesome. He was so smooth.
I think the best line in the episode was he says, Madam, I've trained so many people in Buckingham Palace that I'm known around the guard as the professor.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, that was good. It was very well done. Very well done. So then we have the gang, Wade and Quinn, trying to go find Duke Remy, who was just hanging out at Camp Muir. And I just thought that was a little weird. Okay. Now, talking about the trivia, of course, he was not just hiding out, but he was just there apparently out of spite for some reason because of the fight. But it just seems weird that he would just hang out there if they attempted to murder him. Why not go back to the castle? If you have all these secret ways to get back into the castle, why not do that then?
Yeah, it was a little off because they do say in dialogue that they went out there to murder him in some sort of boating accident. Mm-hmm. And even though he survived, you're right, why would he continue to just hang out at a place where they know he would be?
Yeah, because they could come back and just, you know, it's like, what the heck? I don't know. It was a bit odd. That part right there was a little bit off.
Mm. And he had to know who was doing it, because it seemed that Lady Mary's lackeys were royal guards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah. Bit disconnected there, but still, I think they were trying to set the Duke up to be a bit of a douche.
Yes.
And they were. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, it was, basically, yes.
Because even once he does come back, they immediately have another fight, and he walks away again. And he's like, seriously, like, this is what got you in trouble last time. Like, mm-hmm. knock it off already. Stop being exactly. a douche. You know, speaking of the royal guards that Lady Mary has working for, they are the worst guards ever.
Yes. Yes.
Seriously. Like, they get back to Camp Muir because they're going to go and hide out. So she's like, go and burn it down. And they set fire to the house, but it doesn't even, like, burn down. It seems like the thing just fills with smoke. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, you can't even light a fire. You've got a whole canister of gas there.
Yeah. And it's a wood cabin. Yeah. It's a wood cabin. It's like, come on.
You guys are terrible. And then, of course, George shows up. So right. they get in a sword fight.
And Quinn is pretty handy with a sword.
Yeah, Quinn manages to, like, fight them off pretty well. I'm like, these are trained royal guards.
Yes.
And they can't even win a sword fight against Quinn, who has no training in sword fighting.
Exactly.
As far as we know, I don't know, maybe he took fencing in school or something, you know.
Oh, maybe that's part of his backstory that comes out in season 6 along with me being a lover of Remy. It's all going to be revealed, don't worry.
Yeah, he did enjoy his extracurricular activities.
Yes.
So while they're all at Camp Mueller, Quinn and Wade are uncovering the whole plot. And they find, you know, love letters between the king and Lady Mary, and they find out that George is actually the king's son, illegitimate as he is. I thought it was kind of cool that, like, he was really just unaware of it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Like, rather than he and his supposed aunt, quote-unquote,
right,
we're in it together. I kind of like that he was just like, no, I don't want this, you know?
I know. It was really cool because he's like, what are you talking about? I just take them away, you know?
Mm. And it does tie really well in, it ties into those themes of how Arturo was saying, you know, the servants live to serve and they mm-hmm. expect their superiors to act superior. You can kind of understand that mentality that he would have, you know? Even though he is king, he kind of has that ingrained thing where he'll do anything to help the royal family. He doesn't want to see anybody die.
Yeah, he's a really, like, he really seems like a really stand-up character, you know, when he's talking with Daniel. He's like, well, I will rule until your baby is, you know, old enough to assume his duties. You know, it's like he's dedicated, which is cool. It was cool, better than him being, like, you know, a conniving person.
Exactly. And I recognize the actor, too, by the way.
Oh?
I don't know if you're a fan of Pauly Shore at all.
I may have seen the movie. A movie with him, yeah.
He was in a Pauly Shore movie called Son-in-Law.
Oh, I remember that, Son-in-Law, yeah.
Yeah, and he actually played a douche in the movie. A really old douche. But, yeah, I don't know. It was kind of just like I saw him. I was just like, oh, yeah, I know that guy.
All right, so we've got Arturo, who's going to operate and do a C-section on Remy because, you know, he's smart. I got problems with this. You know, I got problems with this because he's a scientist. He's very smart, but like, how does he know how to really, really operate on someone and do a C-section without killing them? Cause that's a real danger. It's not like they have like all the right equipment they need, you know, to do like this complex medical procedure. You know, if it was a woman, all right. Given, he could easily just, you know, have known, you know, more about delivery and just push and, you know, this and that. That's a little bit more acceptable. But to me, I'm like, really, he's going to cut open Remy and everything's going to be fine in the end.
It's a logical conclusion, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. if anybody's going to do it, it would be the professor.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like, the man's not a medical doctor. He's
exactly.
professor of cosmology and ontology at the University of California.
Exactly. Exactly. It has nothing to do with giving someone a C-section.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's a better use of Clinton Derricks. Don't give him any lines. Just exactly. use him whenever you're going to have Remy and Remy in the same shot talking to each other. Just use Clinton Derricks on the reverse.
Exactly.
And only use Clevant to actually give lines.
Yeah, see, because I didn't even, like, when I was watching it, even this time when I was watching it, I couldn't tell the difference between Clinton and Clevant because he wasn't speaking. You know, there wasn't that different cadence to his words. So I was like, oh, that is him, isn't it?
Mm. There was only a couple of shots where I saw it was him. And the main one was when they got to Camp Mueller together and, like, the Duke helps Remy out of the car, pregnant Remy out of the car.
Yeah. No, it's good that they kept it, like, small like that and not, like, focused, you know, on, oh, look what we can do since we have twins. We can have them interact and do this and that and all this other stuff. They just kept it very minimal, which I think that's key.
Exactly.
That was key.
Exactly. I know we've poo-pooed on the All's Well That Ends Well kind of endings that they come up with, mm-hmm. but I thought this was fine, you know? The future king is saved and George is going to act as regent until the king is of age to rule. Everybody's very happy with Remy for helping out.
Just typical good ending, you know, like, all right, yay for us.
Yeah. And then I love the line, too, as they go to slide where Arturo says to Remy, this time you can land on me if you want to. And they sort of, like, help him out because, you know, he's just had a C-section, so he's a little mm-hmm. sore and... Yeah, so the professor sort of puts him up on the arm and says, you can land on me if you want to.
Yep.
Oh, that was a nice touch.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then we end with a little bit as we go into the next world, which, you know, of course, we're not going to follow up on, but it's one of those little tag endings that we haven't had in quite a while in Sliders.
The winged humans.
Yes, exactly. Which I was like, oh, well, that's different. It made me think of that deleted scene that I told you about. They were supposed to include, I forget what episode it was, where they landed in a world where there was a bunch of tree-dwelling humans with tails. Mm. Remember that deleted scene? That's what it reminded me of when I saw that.
Yeah. I mean, the effects didn't look very good.
No.
Of the little girl flying away. And it didn't look like the mother had wings.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I would assume that she did, but I don't know. You know, we don't know what the story is for that world.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. It's been a while since they've done any of these little tag endings, and I don't think we needed it, but it was there.
Yeah, it's good when the tag ending is kind of like a twist, maybe, like a Twilight Zone-type twist at the end, and it's less good when they do things like this just for the shock value.
Mm.
You know, like I can't think of any actual examples at the moment, but I know there were a couple tag endings where it seemed like it was like a very dramatic twist on the tag, you know, and like they wouldn't follow up on it, but it was like, oh, wow, that would have been a neat thing to see how they followed up on it, but they didn't. Mm. Whereas stuff like this, where it's just, oh, a flying kid with wings, it's like, all right, that's cool, I guess, you know, not bad.
That's the cabin.
Leave. Now.
Since when do you give me orders? Step aside, Lance. Get out.
Do it.
George, what are you doing?
Stopping the bloodshed.
All right, you know. Now don't muck it up. With the child out of the way, we can rule with you as king, as you were always meant to be.
You can't be serious.
I've waited a long time to get what was mine. Promises were made, my son, and now it's time to collect.
You're a monster. Get in the car.
Don't be a fool, George. I've done it all for you.
You better get to the cabin.
Okay, so let's get into some messages in time.
All right, so we've got messages in time for the Prince of Slides. A lot of people were guessing exactly what the deleted scene was all about, that she was descended from Thomas Jefferson. So they actually got that exactly right. I was like, wow, that was really good on them for guessing that.
Interesting.
So good on the 1996 watchers. people were liking that there were multiple divergences in history. So it wasn't just the fact that it was a monarchy, but also the whole viral issue, you know, having the not being able to carry a baby to full term. They thought, well, that was cool too, because it switches up on many different angles then.
Yeah.
They liked the firearms were not available. It was only swords, because one person had posted about how in Japan they actually forbid guns for a long, long time. It was just you had to use just swords and things like that.
Yeah, so, and, that was cool. And British police don't carry guns.
Oh, yeah. There you go. That's right. So see, it fits right in. So they like that. As we have asked, people were asking, where does Wade keep this diary? Because there's no backpack. What's going on?
Yeah. Are we going to keep asking this? She just has it.
Yeah. Exactly. She just has it. Yeah. All right. Little, I don't know. Puts it down her pants or something. Yeah. You know? All right. Let me get it for you, Wade. Here. They couldn't tell the difference between the two Remys, which again, like I said, I didn't even realize it was both of them.
Yeah. It's like I said, they, good use of yeah, Clinton.
Don't talk, Clinton. Sorry. We just like your brother more. They did say that, boy, Remy healed up pretty quick from that C-section. He was just like back to normal again, you know? Like, it wasn't like, I think if you had an actual C-section, you're not going to want to be sliding around.
No, he was hobbling. The professor was helping him through the vortex. I went with it.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I just know, like I know people who've had a C-section and they're like out of it for a little while. You know, it's kind of major surgery, you know? They were saying, that the professor is coming off as too much of a jack of all trades. You know, it seems like he could do just about anything. If there's a problem, he's got taken care of. You know, he can deliver babies. You know, he's got electronic smarts. You know, he knows other disciplines besides just theoretical physics. They just don't like the fact that he's able to do just about anything he needs to do in that episode.
He knows where oil deposits are at any time. He knows when tornadoes are electrically charged.
They're like, it's a little much, you know? So that's it for the Prince one. Now let's take a look at messages in time for The Fire Within. This is what I was saying earlier, that the flame repeating words isn't really learning language. They said someone could say Chinese words and I could repeat them back. Doesn't mean I know what I'm saying or that I understand anything at all about it.
Yeah.
So I thought it's a bit of a stretch. I said, because as I was reading this, I was glad people were hating the sentient fire, because a lot of them were making jokes. They're like, well, what's next? Are we going to have sentient air or sentient water or live rocks? You know, it's like, ugh. So I felt good about that. Let's see. And they were saying, okay, so if the U.S. just had a ton of oil, then cars would stay the same style since the 1950s. There'd be no organized labor. Furniture and tech wouldn't evolve past the 40s. It's just like, it's just, you know, it was not the best laid out, I guess, episode is what they're trying to say.
And it's like I was saying, you know, they got the old TVs, but they got, you know, modern computer monitors and stuff. Like, it didn't mesh too well there.
And then we have this guy. If you remember, I don't think it's the same guy, but it's just in general, it's this guy. When we watched the Dream Masters, there was someone who was like, this was the coolest episode ever. He threw a fireball.
Fireballs. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And so this guy, I don't know if this is the same guy or whatever, but he's like, oh man, special effects. There were wormhole shots. We had three worlds. And oh my God, Quinn's face when the flame talked. This is how the show should be. Reminds me of season one. Cool episode. I was like, you suck, sir. You completely suck. Go home. Yeah. No.
Must be getting his jellies off of the fire within there.
Whoa! I guess.
Building was on fire. There's fire everywhere.
Exactly.
Whoa.
Oh,
couldn't
man.
Tell the it's, difference it's... between the real fire and the CG fire. Amazing.
It was like David Peckinpah's like nephew or something, I bet.
Or was David Peckinpah?
It was David Peckinpah trolling the message boards.
Wow. Okay, so messages from Earth Prime. Did we have any?
Nothing.
No.
Let's see. Russian cabby lottery fan did say he really enjoyed The Guardian as well. You know, our positive comments about it. He was in total agreement about it as well.
Awesome. I'm missing all the feedback that we used to get. I mean, we never got a hell of a lot of feedback, but we still got some.
Where are you guys? I haven't seen iReactions on the forums in a while either. I don't know if he's just really extra busy these days or what's going on. But yeah, it's been a little less active than in the past.
Yeah. Now we want to hear from you guys. We want to know what you're thinking about these episodes. Are you agreeing with us, or are you just like so pissed off at us for like getting down on the show for the last few episodes?
There's some good. I liked the Prince of Slides more than I remember liking. You know, I still don't like The Fire Within, but I like the Prince one, you know, a lot more than I remember.
Yeah.
You know?
That's kind of where I'm at too. Like, I was like real skeptical on The Fire Within. I was like, Sending and Fire. But then I watched it and I kind of liked it. I really, really liked The Prince of Slides. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. And it looks like next week's not going to be too bad.
Yeah, no, I remember these two episodes. I remember liking them. I know we've got a big guest star in the next episode, which is State of the Art.
Which I kind of remember. I don't remember the details, but I kind of remember the guest star and what goes on.
And then following that, we will discuss Season's Greetings.
Which I really like that episode. Yeah. I remember liking that episode.
Yeah.
Now that I'm looking at it with an analytical eye, we will see, but I remember liking it a lot.
Mm. Wade-centric too, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, she's in it. And we got Wade's sister, who's played by the Dabo girl from Deep Space Nine. So it's all good. It's all good.
Don't give it away yet. It leaks some suspense for the next episode.
Since we are talking about those two episodes, I thought maybe we should say, hey, if you guys have any thoughts about State of the Art or Season Greetings, put them in that forum or email us about them.
Yeah.
You know, and then we can, you know, ahead of time, and then we could work that into the show as well if there's anything that you want to say about it in particular.
Absolutely.
But for now, that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity, if you want to read those lost and found scenes, earthprime.com, and the active forum over at sliders.tv.
And you can always write us an email or send a voice message to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. Helps people find the show and brings in the listener interaction that we love. Okay, thanks for joining me for two more episodes, Tom. Great discussions. Mm-hmm. So until next time, I'll just say, oh, can't believe I gotta go again. Gotta go.
We gotta slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.